on guns around a victim of a crime who was actually just a, you know, I mean, they did that because he was a parolee. The shooting of Happy John Dine, which may or may not have been justified, but certainly was never adequately investigated. But I think it really is essential for us to raise these issues. And I guess for me, the issue of Sergeant Baker has never been adequately resolved. I'm hoping it will be at some point. There are some who say that, you know, I've heard rumors that the women were polygraphed, and they said, you know, that they flunked their tests, whereas Sergeant Baker probably passed his. I mean, I haven't got any of the documents. I don't know who's telling the truth about this. It's not even clear where all this is coming from. But what I am concerned about is that there be a real, clear review process that does not involve people who are beholden to, you know, to have an interest in maintaining the prestige of the police department when that means, you know, keeping bad cops. I'm not saying Sergeant Baker is today a bad cop. There certainly was a lot of concern that at that time he was, and I know his conduct around the homeless would have led me to so characterize him at that time.
Yeah, and that was one of the arguments we had about the police department and the DA doing investigations of these complaints. You know, the district attorney answered back with, hey, we will prosecute anyone who commits a crime, and look at what we did in the late 80s with police officers.
Early 80s, yeah.
And, you know, I think if you look back, though, you'll find that though there were trials of police officers who were
beating up homeless people,
hurting and even killing homeless people in Santa Cruz, they didn't go to jail.
They got off. They were acquitted.
Yeah. I mean, people talk about that period. It was very common to hear this argument in 1991 and 2 and 3 when we were trying to create the police review board, that things are better than they were. Things are already cleaned up. Look around. You don't have this red shirt thing going on anymore, the troll busters. When you look at the results of that so-called cleanup, those officers were acquitted.
And one of them apparently went to Monterey, where he shot Charles Vaughn Sr. dead on the roof of the Seaside apartment.
You're kidding. That officer was from Santa Cruz, from that time period.
That was what his son, Charles Vaughn Jr., said at a rally on stolen lives, where relatives of people who have been killed by police testified. Yeah, I can't get into it more detail because I don't have the facts in front of me, but that certainly was what he said at the UCSC forum where that happened.
Robert, I wanted to mention, just to go back to this, to clarify this, if people have been listening, I don't feel like I did it justice. The issue of cross-gender searches, I don't have the penal code in front of me. I have it somewhere, but I do have a letter that explains a little bit, and I'll just read a very small paragraph. Again, this is the issue of, some women complain that Officer Baker searched into their pants or up into their blouses looking supposedly for drugs or weapons. And, it's a legitimate concern of police officers.
Well, the weapons are, the drugs I don't think are. You could wait for a search from a...
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But the district attorney and the police department argued that in fact, the district attorney said that searches into areas of underclothing for the purpose of either finding drugs or weapons by a male police officer upon a female citizen are legal. And I'm just going to read, this is a letter from Lisa Wokus, who was an attorney in Santa Cruz, who represented one of the three women who were involved in the Best Inn Motel incident that was publicized at a press conference. And she says that this idea, and she quotes this letter from the district attorney, Art Danner, that says that cross-gender police searches into areas of underclothing for the purpose of either finding drugs or weapons is illegal. She says this is simply not true. Section 4030 of the Penal Code mandates all searches involving the removal or arrangement of clothing permitting a visual inspection of the breasts or underclothing be conducted by specifically persons of the same sex.
Mm-hmm.
It says that's what it says in the code.
Mm-hmm.
And in the end, the DA, that was the end. the DA said they interpreted the law differently.
Mm-hmm. But they didn't explain what their interpretation was?
Oh, yeah, they do, quite at length. And I have that lengthy explanation. It's actually a couple pages.
What's the bottom line of that?
They say it does not apply to the Best-In incident. The legal analysis, I'm quoting now, the legal analysis includes that the section does not apply to these incidents based on the fact that it was clear that the officers could conduct, under the law, searches into areas of underclothing for the purpose of either finding drugs or weapons. That contradicts the law.
So there's a dispute. Well, I don't know. We don't have the law present. We can't.
Yeah,
tell.
I don't.
We know that one attorney thinks it contradicts the law, and she may want to be right. And the district attorney doesn't.
Yeah.
Frankly, because of my bias, I tend to, wonder. But again, I don't have the law, so I can't say.
I will get a copy of that to you. And I remember clearly it says, the law says that it has to be a person of the same sex. Mm-hmm. And in fact, I remember going to a city council meeting and printing out, or seeing one member of the group who had printed out a huge sign that quoted that section of the code, and it says it has to be someone of the same sex, period.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
Well, that's interesting, and I'm hoping that perhaps you can bring this issue up on your own show.
Yeah.
And kind of cover what we haven't been able to get through.
Yeah.
I'm also interested in your covering at some point why the city council investigating group died so quickly. I found that very telling.
Scott Kennedy and others were quoted in the Sentinel explaining exactly why. And if I can find that really quick, that would be interesting. It was, about 200 people in July of 1992 went to the city council and demanded a independent investigation of these allegations. And the city council said that they would do that.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me. And eventually they changed their mind.
They appointed a subcommittee, and then the subcommittee, I don't think it ever reported on the issue.
Right. And there was an editorial in the Sentinel saying, the headline is, Santa Cruz Council was wrong to succumb to pressure. And eventually the reasons given for stopping their investigation was primarily because of this media response.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see if I can find...
Why don't you look for it, and when you find it, bring it up on your show. And let me know before your show so I could tape a section of that and then replay it next week.
Well, I focus on different things these days on my show, but I would be happy to call you...
Let's do it again.
Yeah, right. With those details.
So for listeners, those of you who are listening in, and now is going to be your chance to call in and talk to me about this at 427-3772. Free Radio Santa Cruz does have the next Bathrop Spears Broadsides, my show, on Thursday from 6 to 8 in the evening. And, of course, we'll return again next week at 11 o'clock in the morning and go for another 2.5 hours.
Mm-hmm.
John Malkin, you are a man who is willing to spend the long distance funds to talk to the Santa Cruz people. I really appreciate that. Is there something you want to conclude with?
One last point is that when these women came forward to file their complaints, it took a lot of courage to do that. And they did it, and they went public. Their names were public. The incidents were public. They're, for some of them, excuse me, it's sort of embarrassing circumstances, and they had the courage to do that. In the end, they were told that they had lied. And I know the ones that I heard from afterwards felt like, why bother with this whole thing? They went through this whole process, and they were told that they were being untruthful.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the same kind of thing that a lot of homeless people are wondering about now that Catherine Byers has come out and said she's not going to propose any changes in the sleeping ordinance, or at least that was her word last Monday. And it really is a question, what did she drag us through all these hearings for if there isn't even going to be a full discussion of the issue? So I think that we see the same old guard cover-up process, the same kind of, you know, closed ranks behind traditional injustice, if you will, institutionalized injustice, happening in the same way.
Yeah.
Again, you might say I'm prejudging the Baker case here. I'm not really. I was around when it was happening, and my mind is not ever made up completely on a lot of this stuff. I mean, I'm always willing to hear more. And if people have new information for me, I'd love to see polygraph test results and so forth. That is worth considering. And again, more important than any of this is how Sergeant Baker is acting now, how the police department is really treating the situation now. We covered a little of that in our last show when we played the task force's focus group on the police department. We found, at least in Vice Chief Locke or Deputy Chief Locke saying stuff that led us to believe that he was, you know, police department apparently was the only organization that came out against repealing the sleeping ban initiative last year. Even the downtown association was neutral on it. This is what coordinator Becky Johnson told me when she'd been checking over the endorsements. And so the police department has its agenda on this. I mean, we've heard the commission for the Coalition for a Citizens Police Review Board had its agenda. Yeah, we all have our agendas in the sense we all have a sense of what we think is right. Mm-hmm. But I think there's also a concern for the truth in these circumstances, and I try to allow that to be the primary concern I have here for the truth. And that's why, you know, what we're talking here has really been quite ambivalent. You haven't been able to give me the smoking gun, you know. I don't have the smoking gun here. I don't think I haven't come to any final conclusions, and my concern now is that police treat homeless people properly. I mean, it's raining heavily outside. It's been doing that for a day and a half. We're in the midst of, you know, again, series of brutal incidents against people, and they're afraid to go to the police because they're afraid that the police aren't going to help them, or even worse, they're involved with the troll busting. And I've heard no, you know, credible evidence that that's true, but that's feared. So I think, you know, the kind of work you did then, you're still doing, is really important, John, and I hope you can give us more information next time you call.
Thanks. You know, I think people are always going to be afraid of other people who have guns and threaten often to use them.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of
natural.
A problem, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, so,
it sure
yeah,
is.
And I'm happy to talk to you again.
Well, thanks a lot, John.
Okay.
Bye-bye. Hi there, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Let me turn my radio down. All right. My sister was one of the three women at the motel room years ago when the incident happened.
Yeah. What was her name?
Rena Dubrin.
Mm-hmm. And your name is?
I'll give it Chen.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to state, I remember, you know, this was a while ago, a number of years back, basically that, you know, a sister doesn't come to her brother and say this happened if it didn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
And if I remember correctly, what she told me is that the officers took the women individually, one officer, if I remember correctly, into the bathroom along with them and searched them, which I think is just, first of all, I wouldn't feel comfortable even if a male officer took me into a bathroom alone to search me.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wanted to... I just happen to be changing radio stations. I listen to you guys very rarely because I can hardly get you down here at the office.
Mm-hmm.
But I happened to hear that, and it grabbed my attention. I just wanted to call in and say that, you know, my sister told me about this, you know, before it ever happened on the news and everything. And I just wanted to say that from my point of view, listening to my own sister telling her brother what had happened, that this is exactly what happened.
You know, what I'd appreciate you doing, caller, is call our producer at 423-4833 after you've hung up and leave your number with her so she can get in touch with you later.
I did.
Oh, that's great. You're you're way ahead of me. Do you know, what's been the... Is your sister still in the area? What has been her reaction to this? Does she feel that she was... was she given a polygraph test?
No, I don't think so. I'm not exactly sure. This was a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
But when I heard you talking about this on the radio, I tried to call her, but she was still at work to let her know maybe she should call in and say something.
What crime was she accused of?
I don't remember exactly what it was.
But she's a working person at this time?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, she's a mother.
She hasn't been jailed for, you know, shooting down police officers or dealing hard drugs?
No, she's a wonderful person.
Uh-huh.
And which is I remember, you know, I can just say this right now. I got arrested for small drunk in public walking down the street on the east side.
Were you?
Yeah, about a block from my house.
Were you drunk?
Yeah, I was.
Uh-huh.
But at the time, I remember sitting and it wasn't too long ago, and I was sitting in the police car while these other cops were talking outside, and I heard over the radio something about my name sounded familiar to them, mm-hmm. and I heard one of the, I don't think they realized their radio was on, but I heard a couple of the officers talking over the radio saying that that I was the brother of one of the girls who had, like, you know, caused this guy some sort of problem, and they were just kind of like, their whole thing was like, you know, oh, we'll get him then.
And did they get you?
Well, I wouldn't say they really got me, because I'm a pretty peaceable person, and that, you know, I don't have any reason for people to really give me a hard time or anything.
Mm-hmm.
But it was just kind of strange to hear that, you know, over their radio, that their attitude was more along the lines of revenge than, you know, just civil duty.
Yeah, it's really eye-opening to hear this kind of a perspective. Did you ever have any contact with any of the other women, or did you follow the case when it was happening? Or?
No, actually, at the time, me and my sister hardly saw each other very often, because we weren't living together at the time.
Mm-hmm.
We were like, we had, you know, moved out of our mother's house at the time, but, and that was a while ago, but it definitely drew my attention when I heard it on the radio.
Mm-hmm.
It made me remember that, you know, I remember her telling me that the police officer took them in one by one in the bathroom, you know.
And did he say what the officer did?
Well, I remember her saying, like, you know, he made them, like, you know, lift up their shirt and lift up their bra, and he checked their bras to see if they had any drugs or anything inside their bras hidden, which I don't think is, first of all, legal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe for a female officer in the company of other officers, at least witnesses.
Mm-hmm. Do you know the reason for the original police call? Why the cops were there at all?
No, I don't. It was a long time ago, and I don't remember.
Yeah, it was
the details.
Indeed. Wow. Any other thoughts on this?
Well, I just think it's, I mean, I can understand police camaraderie, but, you know, right is right. I remember when that all happened, and there was, like, posters on the telephone poles and stuff saying that, you know, a lot of things about this officer who had done, I guess, apparently...
There was a wanted poster around
Gucci Vegas. Yeah, numerous things, apparently, he had been alleged of doing. And then I remember hearing that he had been, like, promoted or something like
Sergeant,
that.
Sergeant, yeah. He's now Sergeant Baker. He was declared Man of the Year afterward by the police department, then he was promoted.
Yeah, I thought that was kind of like a slap in the face to the people of Santa Cruz County.
I did, too.
I mean, especially if... I mean, it just doesn't make sense to me. I didn't really follow it too closely, but it seems to me like if anyone is doing something that's not right, especially someone in a position of power, that they should be... questioned, at least, at the very least. And if they are wrong in what they're doing, they shouldn't be given more power, you know, with people that have power, that have malicious intent. We've seen where that goes.
It seems to me kind of arrogance on the part of the police department to say we can do whatever we want, and I mean, it's like the comment that allegedly this police officer said to the homeless man after they'd drawn the gun on him at midnight in the, you know, in the abandoned building, you know, after he'd given him a ticket for trespassing because he was trying to get out of the rain, had no other place to go. And he said, "You shot my friend Happy John, your police department." And they said, "Yeah, but we got away with it."
Yeah, I heard that.
They could say such a thing. You know, I mean, again, I wasn't there. I keep repeating this story because it sticks in my mind. I mean, And when I hear from you, you know, that there's still this kind of... Well, at least I assume they didn't retaliate. They may have talked about retaliating against you, but they didn't retaliate, right?
No, we'll see. it seems to me like in a community like Santa Cruz, I mean, I've lived here all my life, and I remember the old mall and the whole artist, you know, creativity, peace and love and all that stuff going on in Santa Cruz that's existed for a long time. I just find it very strange to see our society become so into, like, I don't know what the Gestapo or whatever you want to call it. I mean, I've seen police officers beat up drunk homeless guys that are obviously in, you know...
Are you talking about Santa Cruz police officers?
Yes. On the mall. I've seen, in broad daylight, I've seen them beat people up.
Now, when was the last time you saw this?
Well, this incident I'm thinking of was probably maybe 10 years ago.
Uh-huh. And where did it happen?
Right in front of Union Grove Music.
Oh, you're talking about Mike with Sergeant Hennig and Morpheus Mike?
I don't know who it was, but
was it a guy who was slammed on a police car and then slammed to the ground?
Yeah, I watched that. That sounds like the incident that I watched with a number of friends of mine.
April or May of 1990.
That's about the time it was.
Yeah, I remember Sergeant Hennig did this, and that was the one time Karen Gillette allowed us to do a rally at her, it was then her free meal, and we all marched downtown, marched to the police department to demand some kind of response, and as a consequence, four of us got arrested for marching. I was one of the four arrested, I remember that.
Yeah, I think it's one thing to, you know, if there's people in our communities that are really, like, you know, violently hurting people, you know, then I think violent force is sometimes necessary to restrain them, mm-hmm. and apprehend them and put them behind bars so that they can be in a situation to where they're not going to harm other people.
Mm-hmm.
But people that are obviously not causing anyone any harm don't really deserve to be beat up.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's just common sense.
Well, you know, it's interesting. Sergeant Hennig, or we used to call him Hobo Hunter Hennig, Bob Hennig is still on the force, of course, and still doing his thing. He had a little kind of scandalous incident with a prostitute some years back, but that's neither here nor there. But he actually, a lot of this had to do with his involvement with the Downtown Association, where he would hold the one meeting around the same time. He referred to his practice of dealing with homeless people as cattle herding. That is the phrase he used. It's actually written in the Downtown Association, either the Downtown Association report or the police department report on that issue, that cattle herding was what he did with respect to homeless people. And apparently, Mike Hobson, that was the man's name who was beaten, didn't want to be regarded as a piece of cattle, and he got punished for it. And it was, and then when we attempted to bring this to the police department's attention, they invited us in to talk about the issue, and then they gave us tickets. So it's really quite, of course, again, we're talking 1990, but the question is, are we getting the schmooze deal now from the police department that is sitting in on this, the negotiations around the, supposedly to amend or repeal the sleeping ban in some parts of the city so that homeless people can have some place to sleep. They're suddenly now they're the kindler, gentler task force, or the kindler, gentler police department. And indeed, you know, citations are down, way down, but I continue to hear that tents are being slashed. I continue to hear that troll busters are on the loose, and, you know, the police haven't been able to deal with that I'm aware of. I hear that homeless people are being forced to move along out into the rain from under awnings, things of this sort.
Right.
So it may be a kindler, gentler police force, but it ain't much kindler and gentler, you know?
Right. I'm pretty well off nowadays. You know, I have a really good job and a good career ahead of me. But I've been in situations in my life where I didn't have the money to pay rent and had to move out into, you know, my car and sleep in my car, and I've been woken up with police officers rousing me in the middle of the night sleeping in my car, you know, not harming anyone, of course, mm-hmm. which is, you know, apparently illegal. But, I mean, for me, being a member of the community all my life, you know, and to have maybe gone down on my luck a few times, and, you know, maybe whether it was economy or not having work, to go out of their way to wake someone up and make them move when they're not causing any problem, really. I mean, it's one thing if someone's parked in front of someone's house with a van, and maybe the people in front of the house that have the house with the van in front of it don't want them there.
Mm-hmm.
That might be their right to say, you know, move. But if no one's complaining, I think of it as one person that's able to get a good night's sleep instead of sleep on the mall during the day because they had to walk around all night.
It's actually illegal to lie down any time during the day or night on the mall.
I know, that's ridiculous.
Isn't it amazing? I mean, you can sit in certain areas, increasingly very few areas, but you can't lie down at all because of the Downtown Association ordinances, or the downtown ordinances as they're called.
Well, I remember a kinder, gentler Santa Cruz when you could walk down the mall and smoke a joint and you didn't have half as much violence as you do nowadays.
Officers claim in the most recent report they gave to the task force that 80% of their complaints are 80% of their citations or stops, I'm not quite sure which, for sleeping are complaint generated. And the problem I have with that is, one, I think we need someone to independently document that is really happening. Maybe it is. Maybe there's a sort of a nasty, you know, side to that. I certainly have heard people at the Harvey West Association saying that they've they feel the police aren't doing their job, but they aren't out there arresting people enough for sleeping. That's some of the hardcore people out of the Harvey West Association who are concerned with, you know, they find needles, they find mattresses, they find trash and litter. That, to me, that means that the Public Works Department or whoever's supposed to be cleaning that up isn't doing their job. I mean, you know, we're in an urban area. This is not Disneyland. You know, this is a reality in 1999, and it's not swept off the streets by arresting people for sleeping. And you know, I think a fair shake has got to be given to the cops, as well as a fair shake-up. And I think a little of both will be called for here.
Are people still allowed to sleep at the homeless shelter?
Your
camp, at least?
No, there's no campground, even a pay campground, anywhere within the city limits of Santa Cruz. And there is a $14 or $17 campground outside the city, I believe.
Henry Cow.
Yeah, Henry Cow. But a lot of, I think part of that is closed in the winter. And I'm not sure about this winter. And I think that also they have a strict limit on how long you can be there. I think it's either 7 days or 2 weeks, out of and only a total of 2 weeks or a month out of a year. So it's not a solution for people, particularly people who don't have mobility. I mean, if you have a vehicle, you're in somewhat better shape if you have the money to do it. You know, and you can get a campsite together. And that actually was used by homeless people when Mike Rotkin, Daryl Darling, and other bureaucrats like Kennedy threw, with buyers watching, by the way, and not protesting, our new mayor, threw everybody out of the Coral Street Open Air Shelter, which is the campground you're referring to.
Right. I remember when that started, and I remember thinking that was a good idea. I mean, my office is not too far from there, mm-hmm. and, you know, I get a lot of homeless traffic out here, and, like, you know, we have, like, awnings and stuff where in the wintertime homeless people will sleep, mm-hmm. and I don't see anything wrong with it. I mean, because it's at night, they're gone in the morning, I just let them be.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember thinking, when they started the homeless camp there and stuff, I remember thinking that was a really good idea because it gave people a place to be, not necessarily like some sort of place where people from all around the world can come here because it's some safe haven, like it seems to me that the bureaucracy is afraid of,
mm-hmm.
but just a place where people can be. It's almost like you might want to call it a sub-community or an alternate community,
mm-hmm.
but just a place where people can, and if the community really gets involved, a lot of these people could find work. I mean, something as simple as picking up trash off the beach for minimum wage,
mm-hmm.
and a truck comes there from the county, chances are there's probably some way that this can even be a tax write-off or some federal fund goes for the county or from the state to where these people can hopefully find some sort of way to maintain their own existence while benefiting the community.
Yeah, I think one thing that the stat that I've heard recently, when they has been that 2/3 of the homeless community is either working part-time or full-time, and that one thing that was really facilitated by the Coral Street Open Air Shelter, Dan Hopkins, who was later did the protest in front of City Hall and fought the community house project when it was going to go in on that property, and fought to with a group called Save Our Shelters to keep the campground together in 1995 when the bureaucrats wanted to dismiss it and send it off into the wilderness, which they eventually did. He's pointed out that having, as you say, a place where people can keep their stuff during the day, keep their dog during the day, have a place they can come back to, establishes a kind of stability in people's lives that really can be very important. And it's also true, though, that there's, you know, problems that develop. I mean, they're drunks, and in this situation, it actually was safer for the drunks, and although more unpleasant for other people. I mean, this campground could have turned into a quarter of it was drunks, and a quarter was families, and a quarter of it was single people. I mean, it was sort of there were different people. There were people using drugs there. That's true, too, but they're going to be using drugs elsewhere as
right.
well. And the idea that it actually, and I keep repeating this endlessly, but it seems to me very obvious, they were next to facilities where if there were problems, they could be dealt with.
Right.
Either security problems or overdose problems, whereas in the days that followed after Mayor Riot Act Rotkin, as I call him, closed down the campground, people died. They died of overdoses, they died of exposure, they died of alcoholism, and that didn't happen while the campground was going on.
Right. I mean, it's our duty as civilians to protect the community. it seems to me that, you know, all life, or most life that I know of, is patternistic. And if you can put someone in a situation who's basically used to not really having a place to put their stuff except for maybe stashing it in a bush, and they're putting it in a locker, and they're going to their part-time job, they're coming home, they're building some sort of patternistic stability, it's going to benefit them and it's going to benefit the community.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I'm always glad that Karen Gillette's Homeless Services Center got started, in the sense that they got lockers and they got a phone and they got showers and there's a free meal. I'm kind of sad that the homeless population has been tamed largely by Karen out there, that they're not actively pressing for real changes, that she herself isn't coming forward and standing up and speaking about these issues, because she's so worried about the merchants criticizing her and so worried about, I don't think she's really worried about losing her funding. I mean, she is the fair-haired girl.
Whatever became of the homeless garden project?
You know, after Rotkin and the city council majority last year screwed over the Pelton Street people and sold the property, so for what I call the Pelton Street.
They're building houses there.
Big fancy houses, yeah. And actually, you know, meanwhile, the Pelton Street people were running around trying to get initiatives for the signature, and they got lots of people to sign, and if there was any real democratic process, they would have held off on that, but of course they didn't.
Isn't this right next to the land that our mayor saved a long time ago?
You know, it's on the west side, both of it, but I'm not quite sure where it is. I think it's fairly close, yeah.
It was right across the street from the...
Kirky Street is where she lives. Are you talking about Lighthouse Field?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. I think Pelton Street is fairly near Lighthouse Field,
right,
though, again,
there.
I might be proven wrong. I know that they moved to a smaller place, and that they got some sort of dispensation, potential dispensation in the Pogonip, but that I don't think that's been activated yet.
I remember years ago when San Lorenzo Park was basically a place where you could walk through and buy LSD, buy pot.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to wonder, like, you know, why the police officers didn't just come through and just, like, arrest everybody. And it seemed to me at the time that there must be some reason behind it, since it was so close to the county building,
mm-hmm.
that at least all the drug dealers, whatever, were all in one place and they could keep an eye on them. And basically it's in one spot, as opposed to spread out throughout the community in situations and in places where if something dangerous arrived, where someone was being killed or something, that no one would know about it.
That's
and it seems to me that a homeless shelter where basically, as far as, you know, the people who are more concerned about these people being a problem to the community or whatever, are, in their minds, in one spot where they can stay away from them if they want to,
mm-hmm.
or keep them under their control or whatever, mm-hmm. but at least the people have a place to be and not have to, like, you know, sleep in someone's front yard.
Well, I think that actually, if you read today's Santa Cruz Sentinel, you see a rather distorted series of editorials and an article that actually favors us, but it was written a week too late. They put it in, it was supposed to go in 2 weeks ago, and the situation has markedly changed. But none of the people who oppose letting homeless people sleep at night really talk about that. Instead, they talk about the magic phrase, lifting the camping ban. And lifting the camping ban, of course, has a much more broad kind of thing, which a few people favor. I mean, interestingly enough, Community Action Board, a social service agency, says since there are 500 to 1,500 homeless people in Santa Cruz, and there's shelter for less than 220 in the winter and 40 in the summer, you cannot tell people that they cannot shelter themselves with tents. I'm sorry, that's a form of violation of the basic constitutional right of life there.
It's inhumane.
Yeah, it's more than inhumane. It's you know, it takes away a person's right to survive. I mean, it's a form of murder, actually. I mean, you're telling someone eventually, we're going to make it illegal for you to protect yourself against the environment, yet at the same time we're going to tell you that, you know, it's a form of banishment, I guess you'd say it best.
Mm-hmm.
But mostly what the Sentinel didn't do was it didn't say, look, the real issue here is, I still haven't got it yet, in other words, is what about a limited sleeping zone somewhere? Not lifting the camping ban everywhere. That's not the issue. The issue is a limited sleeping zone.
A designated area.
Right, a designated area. And it's, you know, of course, it's the reason that they confuse the issues, because that way they can prompt hysteria and fear, and they don't have to talk about the real issues. And it's either that, or they're just, you know, I don't know.
Well, it could be
intellectually challenged or something. It's hard to tell.
It could be a true benefit to the community, because I've taken in people used to live at the homeless shelter on a regular basis and go down to.
What kind of work do you do, by the way?
I'm a software developer.
Oh, okay.
And I can be emailed if anyone has any comments or anything at admin@iac.com.
That's admin at I... One more time.
Admin, A-D-M-I-N, at iac.com.
Mm-hmm.
And you can also check my band's website and listen to us on the web.
Mm-hmm.
That's monsterjohnson.com.
Cool. And your name is?
Chen.
C-H-E-N.
That's right.
Well, Chen, let me wind this up because there are probably other people who want to get in. We've been at this for 20 minutes, but you've had a lot of good things to say, and I'm really glad you called in. Is there anything you want to conclude with?
Well, I basically called in for the first place just to say that it seems to me that there's a certain amount of camaraderie between the officers that I think the officers who know what's really going on should just be good people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and have consideration for people in general, because a lot of times officers will think that, you know, they really get into that, they put on the badge and power tripper, because I've had friends that are police officers, and they're a lot different than when they put their badge on. Once you put the badge on, they're like power trippers, and you have to realize that they're citizens of this community, and they're here to help the community and protect the community, and that means the people.
That's right. Thank you, Chen.
Okay, I enjoy your show, and I'll listen to it regularly.
Please, and call in again.
Okay, enjoy your day.
Bye-bye.
I need a bride, but the dolphins are running. A woman who cried, but the sea must provide a child to unravel the scarlet of loving. First things first, when you get to the sea, a rich man eats when he wishes.
And after that brief musical break, we're on the air with a man who has had some experience with probably with crooked cops and twisted judges and a deformed district attorney's office. We're talking to attorney and DA hopeful Ed Fry. Hi, Ed.
Hi. You make me sound like more like a doctor than a lawyer.
Well, I hope you can do some doctoring on our county. I know that you have been a real supporter of Free Radio Santa Cruz in the old days, and that you worked as an attorney against the drug prohibition war up in, what, was it Humboldt County?
Mendocino
County, back in the 70s. And you've been fighting to make sure that the DA locally, Art Danner, deals straight with us. You've fought him in at least two elections, and the last time you got 42% of the vote.
Right, and last November up in Mendocino County, they elected a guy who was opposed to the drug war as DA, and also as sheriff. Different, both the DA and the sheriff now are opposed to the drug war.
Are these your old cronies, Ed?
Well, there's some guys I know, yeah.
And how are they doing? Are they actually able to have an impact on that, or are they...
Yeah, they're just prosecuting big, you know, commercial drug operations where kids are targeted as customers. Other than that, you know, it's they're not prosecuting drug offenses.
And the camp people are grinding their teeth in frustration?
Oh, I'm sure they are. They're trying to figure out some way to get around this guy, but, you know, when the people decide, because it was real clear in the campaign up there that that was their position, the people themselves decide that that's what they want to do, is stop the drug war. There's not a whole lot that these drug bureaucrats can do.
Well, I've heard, though, maybe I'm thinking of older stories of people driving through that area still getting stopped and pulled over by, and these impromptu dogs sniffing your crotch kind of things, and that you should actually not take those roads through if you want to be free of that kind of invasion of privacy. Do you know are they able?
Well, yeah, I've been down here for about 16 years, so I really don't have a good handle on what's going on right now, but I think that with the new sheriff who was just installed in January,
mm-hmm.
Being opposed to the drug war, I think that stuff is going to stop if it hasn't already.
What's the situation with the Santa Cruz County? As you look over the last decade in Santa Cruz, have they been more intense in prosecuting people around drug war crimes in, let's say, Monterey County or Santa Clara County? Do you know?
No, they know that the heat is building against them. I mean, my two campaigns for DA in 1990 and 1994, Measure A in, what was it, 92, where 77% of the people voted in favor of medicinal marijuana.
Mm-hmm.
They know that it's a losing battle, but they're just trying to stay just below the line where they continue to do what they do, you know, to support the drug war.
Mm-hmm.
But they know they can't get away with as much as they used to. I mean, it used to be just wholesale, throw them in jail and lock up the key, you know, I mean, throw away the key, you know. Mm-hmm. They don't do that anymore, except they do overcharge a lot when, you know, a small amount of drugs is found on a person. If it's more than one helping, they say, oh, possession for sale, you know, which then they make the guy bargain.
Well, I know that I've heard a lot of, in Berkeley recently, they used a lot of felony drug possession with intent to sell simply to get young people off of Telegraph Avenue. 70 people or so were reportedly jailed for that, held on $10,000 bail, you know, taken to preliminary hearings.
Right.
And then they may have, you know, gone more lightly on them. But the same thing happened here to at least three people I know of. They were originally just charged with felony possession of less than a gram of marijuana. I mean, what is that about?
Well, it's about social control. That's what the drug war is. It's an instrument of social control.
Well, apparently it's in collusion with merchants who just want to get certain groups of people off the streets that have nothing to do with their real criminal, any real criminal behavior. I mean, let me ask you, you're running for DA here, right? I mean, you're pushing to be appointed to an interim seat for DA.
That's right.
And when is that hearing? When will that decision be made?
Tuesday at 1:30 is the, there's going to be a long hearing there in which the candidates speak for themselves and answer questions from the public and from the board. Then on Thursday at 1:30, the board will begin to make nominations and decide who's going to be chosen.
How many candidates are in the field here?
8 total.
Do you know all these people?
I do now.
And do any of them share any of your positions? So you really have kind of mapped out a distinctly different terrain?
I'm the only one who opposes the drug war, and I'm the only one who opposes the death penalty. And I would, you know, I told them straight out that I would not. So that's something that sets me apart very clearly. And also the drug war. No one has taken any stand on the drug war except me. And, you know, we have all this abusive and violent behavior going on. We have one deputy right now, one deputy DA assigned to child sexual abuse.
Mm-hmm.
And child sexual abuse is just exploding in numbers. And to have just one deputy working on it is just, that's just wrongheaded.
Does most of that happen in families or between strangers and
most
children?
Most of it happens in families, but there is a lot going on between strangers too, and also adults going after young teenage girls. We saw an article in the paper yesterday about that.
We know there's an upsurge in heroin use and in terms of teenage prostitution, because even such things as seeking housing, you know, people will, and women get themselves into abusive situations with men just to protect themselves so they can get some kind of shelter, you know.
Yeah, they escape from an abusive father only to run into an abusive boyfriend.
Well, let's suppose you were suddenly, through a miracle, I don't see it happening at all because I know who these people are and I know what they want, but let's suppose that you were chosen to be district attorney. What could you do?
What could I do about the drug war? I could shift the resources, you know, away from all this victimless crime.
And would you issue a sort of a memo that said, do this? What would be your memo the first day in office if you got into power?
The memo would be that there will be no more prosecution of any drug offenses except where drugs are being provided to children. Those are the offenses. Otherwise, we treat them the way we treat people who sell beer and gin and tobacco.
You mean those lethal poisons that kill thousands of times more?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Right. What is it, 250,000 people a year die of tobacco, or even more? No,
430,000
a year just in this country alone die of tobacco, and yet tobacco sales are, you know, are permitted.
That's good for business.
Right. Mm-hmm. It's good for the legislators who get all that tobacco money.
That too.
That's what keeps the laws the way they are. That's, you know, the pharmaceutical industry, of course, are scared out of their wits about marijuana, because marijuana is so much better medicine than anything they can make.
Mm-hmm.
And so they, you know, that's the way they keep it illegal.
So you would...
providing all these campaign funds.
You would limit all prosecutions to minors, or dealings with minors. What would that free up if you were to look at... What percentage of the resources currently go to those kinds of prosecutions, the ones that you
somewhere between 30% and 40% of the resources of the DA's office, and also the whole drug bureaucracy, the court bureaucracy and everything, you know. I would save money not only in the DA's office, but also in the courts, as far as that. But I would shift it over to